of your tax people today?
Well, I just think it's first. I think it's going to get a good reception in the financial community and a fair reception, fair to good, in the business community. I think our problem is going to be mainly in the House of Representatives, and my returns on that are incomplete, but I hope to have a pretty full memorandum for you tonight on initial soundings and ways and means. Let me give you a few samples.
First thing I want to know, they tell me they're writing a pretty tough editorial, Bart Rowan, over at the Post.
Post has been taking a very hard line on no taxes, no tax increase for some time.
I wonder, you don't think you and Stan Surrey and might meet with Kay and try to point out to her what we're doing for great society?
No, she and I have had talks about her man Siegel, who writes these economic editorials at some length. She said she doesn't know anything about economics, and both Doug Dillon and Joe Fowler have been critical of him, and therefore there must be something wrong, but there's nothing she can do about it. I tackled her on that some months ago. Siegel is a very opinionated fella. Most of the time he's hitting us over the head. Occasionally he gives us a hand, but I'd say about 75% of the time it's against us. I don't think we've had Surrey go over and talk to Siegel. We've had various others. We've never been able to get anywhere with him. And he's under Russ Wiggins' wing and Ben Bradley's wing. And
Russ, though, is kind of with us. Harry made a little dent, but he said he wasn't writing it, but I understood him say Rowan is writing it.
Rowan has been writing, if Rowan's writing it, it ought to be pretty good, because Rowan has been writing for a tax increase. Siegel has been, who's writing the editorials, has been very solidly bearish all the way through, saying that it's a mistake. And so you've got, they hit you either way, either in Rowan's column, if you're, they'll hit you one way, and in Siegel's editorials, they'll hit you another. But in other words, they're at completely at odds in their position on this thing.
Anything in the Star?
Nothing but news story that...
I mean anything that you can do with the editorial Star?
Yes, I think... Fellow Lee Cohn writes their columns. We could have him in for a pretty good backgrounder, and I think that'd be the most constructive thing.
I think these two papers, anything we do with the three papers would be real good. I'd show them that half the taxpayers don't pay less than $5 a month for this, and you just think this is necessary internationally and financially, and keep the budget down, good leverage anyway, and show them what happened in Korea and what happened World War II, and see if they talk about cutting things out. Tell them just cut $5 billion in programs out, $3 billion expenditures, just finish that in the fall, and see if we can keep either one of them coming out against us. I don't believe that we can stand much editorial harangue here. I hate to call King himself. But, God, I wish he'd lay off of it. He says he's writing a good editorial on the Vietnam part of it, Russ Wiggins said. But you think about that. If you can't get him into the background or anybody in, why, you might do it. You might even get Gardner to come over. Or you might tell him on the cheap money thing that the only way in the world we can get cheap money is to do it this way. And we still got lots of things, a lot of cats to skin that they may not know about on the editorial department. But I noticed that Walt Heller's little bank came down today. I don't imagine it's dropping a bucket, but it's sure making a lot of publicity.
It sure is. I don't know whether it'll be counterproductive or not.
I'm afraid it will be. I'm afraid they'll think we did.
I think they'll blame us. I talked to...
I didn't know it, did you?
No, I didn't. Have any knowledge of it. First of all, I called this morning with David Rockefeller, because, you know, I keep pushing him all the time on this. And I told him, now you've been one of the big advocates of this program. I hope you're going to stay with us now that we've done it. Your views have been very carefully considered, David, in connection with this, and we placed considerable weight on them, and so on. I ran Sidney down. He was in Philadelphia with all of the Ford people, and Joe Perrin had been trying to get through to him, but hadn't reached him. He was inspecting a Philco operation there outside of Philadelphia. He said that on the tax thing, that they were all very, very pleased with it, very relaxed about it. And he said that he volunteered. I didn't solicit this from him. He volunteered. He said the saving grace about it is the 2-year limit. He said that's what makes it go down. And he said I think you're probably going to get a good reaction after for a while from business. He had that was based mainly on his meeting, his conversations, however, with Ford people who were all around him. The House committee, the first return I had was Herlong. He says it's necessary to pay for the war. He'll support the tax increase for that purpose. He will support effort to reduce unnecessary expenditures at home. John Watts, who's another weather vane, likes the form and the simplicity of the bill. If we have to have it, he'll be with us. He's opposed to using any of the tax increase for the Great Society. Nothing surprising about that from Watts. Fulton, young Dick Fulton, Tennessee, if needed, will go along. Thinks majority of the House today is opposed, but doesn't know any more about it than I do. Think space should be reduced to $1 billion. Phil Landrum's noncommittal. He feels that Social Security will be rougher than taxes. On the Senate side, Lee Metcalf's 100% for it and feels it's fine. Ribicoff is going to be for it. You know about Hartke, of course. He's going to be against it. John Williams called us on something else over here today. He wanted to know how much PCs was in that $9.6 billion figure. And he said, volunteered after discussing that with Joe Barr, he said, well, I was for the tax increase before and I'm for it now. I do want to see that it's a Williams-type budget rather than something else, but he said he sounded as though he'd end up being for it. Russell,
what did you say about the PCs? What have we got, 4-3?
Joe told him that we had what the Appropriations Committee had authorized, 4-2, that we thought we were going to be able to get as much as has been authorized because in view of the state of the markets. Of course, we couldn't rely on it 100%, but the way the markets look now, we thought we'd go right up to the limit. William said he was inclined to agree. He's going to want to, I suspect he and Burns both are going to make a great common cause out of the budget gimmickry business. And I told Charlie Schultz, I thought Charlie ought to give some thought to having you set up a joint Hoover-type commission consider amending the Budget and Accounting Act of 1921 to provide a specific way of handling certain specific controversial items in the way we keep our budget. There's no sense in your getting blamed for doing what Kennedy did, what Eisenhower did, what Truman did, what everybody has done. As long as that Budget and Accounting Act is as loose as it is, everybody's going to get hell for it. Now, it has its advantages, and it does give you some area of flexibility. But I think the best answer to the Republicans on this is to say, well, we're perfectly ready to go by the book if somebody will write the book. But the book hasn't been written. They're going to make a big issue out of this.
Yeah, I think so. You and Charlie get together, and let's name the last half a dozen secretaries of Treasury. Let's go back and get Morris Dan, budget director, and Jeremy Gordon. Let's get Bob Anderson and Douglas Dillon and Roy Humphrey.
You see, the reason this was never done before, Mr. President, was that dear Senator Byrd was terribly fearful that somebody would come in with what he called a capital budget. Now, when Burns tackled me on this the other day, I said, it's no use in us having an argument. I said, we're going to treat these things as negative expenditures as long as every time we make a loan, you treat it as an expenditure. And I said, if you want to have a spending budget and a lending budget, we'll go along with that. But we want to have a lending budget. There's no use in treating a good
solid... Why don't you pick out the best banker that you can, about three that are on your side, and then pick out the three secretaries of Treasury, four of them, I guess, Dillon and
Bob Anderson,
and George Humphrey. Any others living?
John Snyder.
There's four of them. Any other living ones?
No, sir.
Take those four. Now, Snyder would be with you, and Anderson, Dillon would be with you. It'd be two, and Anderson would be with you. It'd be three. Humphrey might take Anderson with him, though, man.
George is sick.
George Humphrey?
Yeah.
Well, that's right. We'd name him, but he couldn't serve on account of sickness. That'd be all right. I'd give you three votes right there. Then the budget director, you can take Stans, Gordon, and who else?
Well, Stans, Gordon, and
Pace.
Pace, and the fellow that's preceded Stans is, I can't remember his name, but he's still around. Joe Dodge is dead. He was the first Eisenhower director.
Well,
the man who came later.
I take Pace and Webb.
Yeah.
And
you ought to have a couple of members of Congress on there, like George Mahon.
That's right. Might take Mahon and Russell.
That's right.
And we might take
Bow and I don't...
Bow and Young. It'd be good.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Now, just take those lists while we still got them in our mind. Let's
right.
think about it. And then you write up what you have in mind.
All right.
You're the only politician I got in the cabinet. Ain't another goddamn one of them that know nothing. I'll just tell you that. They won't even answer the stuff. You've got more already on the message than all of them put together. I've had to work all day to try to get them. So just go on and do that. Now... you heard anything from the Federal Reserve today?
Talked to them last night, and Bill said they continued their policy of continuing toward ease, and he thought that the net minus reserve figures would be down pretty close to zero in a few weeks.
What did he think about my speech?
I talked to him before your speech.
Why don't you ask him?
I'm going to ask him.
Tell him you're going to see the President tomorrow. Call him, tell him you're going to go see him. You won't know confidentially or for quotation either. You don't need to break his confidence, but just find out what he thinks. Let's just see whether he thought I went too far. Did you think I went too far in saying I earnestly solicit your support?
No, I did not. And when Rockefeller challenged me a little bit on the fact that you might have been chastising the bankers, I said the speech cannot be construed that way. I said he is regretting what we all regret, which is high interest rates and excessive interest rates and tight money. Says he's not pointing the finger of blame at anybody. And as a matter of fact, if you read the sentence before he gets to the Federal Reserve Board, you'll find that he is acknowledging the fact and stating that we now are moving towards ease. And therefore, for your information, we're all going together on this thing now. I said he has said, let me read it right here. Most interest rates have retreated from their earlier peak. More money now seems to be available, given the cooperation of the Federal Reserve System, which I so earnestly seek. I'm confident this movement can continue. So the implication there is that we're all now playing on the same team.
Yeah, and I think you can just tell him very frankly, Bill Martin told me that they'd have to have a big tax increase. Operate and ease money. Tell him that's what I'm trying to say.